Hello, and welcome to Endeavors. Well, I've been talking about this interview and this show for the last couple of weeks. I don't normally like to make a big deal about things, because in my mind, everyone is equal and everyone has a story to tell. That being said, I was very excited when I got the opportunity to interview my guest today, and when I announced it on social media, there was an outpouring of support, anticipation, and excitement. Because it's not every day you get to interview a member of one of Canada's most iconic bands, the Bare Naked Ladies. I speak, of course, of Kevin Hearn, who has been with the Bare Naked Ladies since 1996. He plays guitar, he plays mandolin, he sings, he plays keyboards, and he plays accordion. Now, most people will know Kevin as a member of the Bare Naked Ladies when he joined in late 95 after he replaced Andy Cregan. But like so many artists and so many people in the music business, he is a member of other bands and has worked on a whole host of other projects. In addition to all the albums he has contributed with the Bare Naked Ladies since 1996, there's about 10 of them. He has also released 3 solo albums, Mothball Mint, Cloud Maintenance, Days in Frames, as well as released 4 albums with the band Kevin Hearn and Thin Buckle, H-Wing, Nightlight, The Miracle Mile, and Havana Winter. Predating his time in the Bare Naked Ladies, he was also in a band called Look People, which released 4 albums, more songs about hats and chickens, Small Fish, Big Pond, Boogasm, and Crazy Eggs. As mentioned in the interview, he has a lifelong friendship with Sean Cullen and the gang from Corky and the Juice Pigs, and appeared on their 1994 album, Pants. He is also a member of another great indie band, the Rio Statics, and has been with them for 5 albums. Music inspired by the Group of 7, The Story of Harmelodia, The Whale Music Concert in 1992, Calling Out the Chords Volume 1, and Green Sprouts Musical Week 1993. Some people may not know this, but his cousin is the comedian and actor Harland Williams. They have formed a band together called The Cousins and have released 2 albums. In 2004, they released Love Song Years, and in 2017, Rattlesnake Love. Harland is also part of the new project that was the reason that Kevin appeared on my show this week. Yesterday, Saturday, April 13th, was Record Store Day. A great big indie music day and celebrating records and vinyl. And for it, Kevin put out a limited edition vinyl called Kevin Hearn and Friends Present the Superhero Suite. It's one long album inspired by different superheroes. There's the Batman theme, Iron Man, Spider-Man, several others. And on the album are different artists. He's got Ron Sexsmith, Carol Pope, Alan Doyle, Sean Cullen of the Corky and the Juice Pigs appears, and Harland Williams, his cousin, also appears on the album. As well, with each album, there is a mini comic book that was designed by a local artist and all of the contributing artists on Kevin's albums are depicted as the different superheroes or the songs that they sing on. The trailer for the album has Kevin and his friends at the Bare Naked Ladies playing the Batman theme song while Canada's own Kiefer Sutherland narrates the video. It was put out yesterday for Record Store Day. There was a limited release of 500 records, and all the proceeds, Kevin's not making any money off this, all the proceeds go to Music Counts, which is a great and wonderful music education charity. So, before we get to the interview with Kevin Hearn, we're going to play one track, one part of the superhero suite, and this is the Iron Man theme, and it features Carol Pope and Alan Doyle. That was Iron Man by Kevin Hearn featuring Carol Pope and Alan Doyle. And that is part of the new EP, Kevin Hearn and Friends Presents the Superhero Suite, released yesterday on Record Store Day. And now, without further ado, here is my conversation with Kevin Hearn. Kevin Hearn, hello, good morning. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Bright and early Toronto morning.
Yes.
So you have a new EP, and I know this record's quite personal for you. It's Kevin Hearn and Friends Present the Superhero Suite.
Yeah.
Do you remember how and when this project first came to fruition for you?
Sure, yeah. I have a solo band called, Kevin Hearn and Thin Buckle. And that's me, Bob Scott on drums, Chris Gartner on bass, and Hugh Marsh on violin. I played in a band in the late 80s and early 90s with Bob and Chris, a band called The Look People. But during our shows, sometimes between songs, I play a bit of the Incredible Hulk theme on the piano. That's one of the first things I learned to play on piano. And we do this routine where I play it, and then Bob would do a drum solo and start turning into the Hulk behind his kit. And people really liked it, so we kept doing it, and we started adding songs to it. And it started turning into this long medley. And then we started thinking, we should record this and have different people sing each section. And I started sort of just daydreaming who could do which section. And I said, you know what? Let's do this. Let's make it real. You know, get it out of my imagination and put it out there. It didn't seem like the type of project that I wanted to sort of sell to make money. I wanted it to be for a good cause, and I thought Music Counts was a really good fit because there's a real childlike sort of element to it, being about comic book heroes, and all the proceeds will go to Music Counts, which helps get instruments and musical programming into schools.
And I know for the promo, the trailer for this album, it has the Batman theme, which is probably the most iconic superhero theme song that exists. Why did you choose that song to help promote this album?
I think it's one of the easier songs to play, perhaps. It's sort of a 12-bar blues figure, and it's got that really recognizable, catchy melody, and we figured the kids would love to play it. So on the record, it's Violent Femmes, Bare Naked Ladies, and Colin Hay. We recorded it all together in a dressing room. We were all on tour together. But in that promo you're talking about, we went into a classroom with the director, Edward Pond, and played together with a bunch of students.
And speaking of the promo, how did Kiefer Sutherland come to be involved?
Well, Edward was mixing the music and the sound for the promo at a studio, and the person who ran the studio is good friends with Kiefer, and thought, wouldn't it be cool if Kiefer did the voiceover? And so we asked him, and he was totally into it. I'd love to plug the guy's studio in his name. I'll try to find it. Sorry.
And I know that accompanying the vinyl, there's a little 10-page color comic book that sort of came out of a collaboration that you know with a friend of yours. But how did the... Where did the idea of creating this sort of this little side book to go with the record?
Well, originally I wanted to do a picture disc, but what I learned in the process was that if you do a picture disc, it actually lessens the sound fidelity a little bit. So I went away from that idea and thought, okay, I want to do it like a one sheet and have it be like the cover of a comic book. But then I approached my friend Lockie Reed, who is an artist I really admire and love, and he teaches at OCAD here in Toronto. And I said, I think I have a project that's up your alley, and because he has a real great sense of humor and imagination. And he loved the idea and said, Kevin, we got to do this like a comic book. And I said, that's going to be a lot of work. He goes, I don't care. We got to do this right. And so it went beyond budget concerns or anything. He was just like, we got to do this. And that's sort of how everyone involved embraced this project, was like, this is fun, let's do it right. And I'm very grateful for everyone who participated.
You have a lot of collaborators on the album. I know you've got your bandmates from BNL. I think Ron Sexsmith, I heard, was on it. How did you go about deciding who was right for the specific songs or the specific areas of the superhero suite?
I really sort of went with what I was imagining in my head, you know, who I heard in the arrangement, what kind of vocal style, and I kind of let that be my lead. For instance, the Transformers theme, Transformers, More Than Meets the Eye, I would just sing it out in the air like Frank Sinatra, you know? Robots in disguise, and who could do that? Oh, Ron Sexsmith could do that. Or Michael Bublé, you know? I asked Michael Bublé, but I never heard back from him. So, you know, Ron's my friend, and he came over and sang Transformers, you know?
The, you know, comic book movies and superhero movies are all the rage right now. You know, we've got Marvel, we've got DC, we've got some independent stuff. But for you, what was the importance of comic books and superheroes in your life?
What it brings to my mind is, in my family, there's six kids, two girls and four boys, and my brothers and I, back in the 80s, every weekend we would hike from Lawrence and Young down to Queen Street, and we'd go to the Silver Snail comic book and shop, and we all collected comics, and we each had our own things. Like, I couldn't buy the Hulk because my brother Mike collected the Hulk, you know. I collected, I guess, Thor and Captain America, but that's because some other ones were already taken by my older brothers. And there's this this air vent in front of City Hall, and the airflow coming out of it back in the 80s used to be a lot stronger. And on our way to the Silver Snail, we'd always take off our shoes and we'd float them in the air above the vent. Not that that's related to this, but it's just a nice memory. That was our ritual. We'd walk down, float our shoes above the vent, and then go to the comic book shop.
And speaking of family, I know that your cousin Harlan Williams actually helps contribute to the comic book.
Yeah, he also has a track on here, the cliffhanger narration.
The and I know you two have collaborated before on the band with cousins and some other things, but collaborating and working with family can always, you know, has its ups and downs for sure. Getting him involved and collaborating with him in this specific way, how was that like for you?
Oh, Harlan and I have collaborated all our lives. So I help him with some of his projects, and he helps me, and we really enjoy that creative connection. So it's really nothing unusual yet.
You mentioned that all the proceeds from this album are going to Music Counts, which is a music education charity. How early on in the process did you decide that you were going to donate everything rather than just, you know, say 10% of the record or whatever?
I think when I was envisioning what this was, as I mentioned, it was like, this isn't something I want to sell or promote as my own thing. I want to do it for a good cause, and Music Counts felt like a good fit. And when I approached people about doing it, I told them straight up, this is for Music Counts. And I think people enjoyed that part of it too, that this is for a good cause, you know. And then when I went to play it for the Music Counts folks, like, I didn't tell them about it. I didn't want them to try to imagine this. I finished it first, which took a few years, and then I went in the office, played it for them, and they said, well, what do you want to do with this? I said, I was thinking I'd love to put it out on Record Store Day as a special fundraising one-off thing, limited release. And I said, but I don't know how to do that. And they said, well, we have a direct relationship with Record Store Day. And the next meeting, Ryan from Record Store Day was there, and it just, like this whole thing, people who were on board really embraced it enthusiastically, and here it is.
What, as an artist, as a musician, what does a day like Record Store Day mean to you?
Oh. Record Store Day is like a wonderful gourmet buffet of all-you-can-eat delights. You know, you go into the store, and for instance, tomorrow they're putting out Lou Reed's Ecstasy record for the first time on vinyl, you know, and I'm really looking forward to that. But also, these days, so many people are remastering and reissuing classic records that you can rediscover records that you haven't listened to in a long time.
You know, in the days of MP3 and streaming, vinyl has, you know, and even in the last couple of years, vinyl has sort of always sort of made a comeback in a certain way. What do you like about vinyl, whether it's putting out a record on vinyl or as someone who consumes music, listening to music on vinyl, as opposed to something like streaming or CDs, which people might say are more easy access?
I like the whole journey from A to B. I like going into a shop and seeing the personality of the people who run the shop, what kind of music they're selling, finding rare things, talking with the guy who owns the shop. Hey, have you heard this? I love the physical ritual of putting on a record, putting the needle down. I love the warmer sound of vinyl. I also love, and this is something you don't always get when you buy a digital, I love reading about where it was made, you know, who engineered it, who sang backup vocals, that sort of thing. You know, that's a whole part of the experience for me.
Is it easier or harder than to be a professional musician today?
It's different. It's a hard career, man. You really have to work, and you really have to... You got to believe in yourself, and yet you have to sacrifice a lot of your time. Sometimes you got to be on the road for months and months if you're in a band, and sometimes you got to work for free just because, for whatever reason, creatively or,
We talked a little bit about the charity, but obviously you mentioned all the, for music education. In an age like today, how important is arts funding, arts education, especially for young people in today's society?
Well, I think music really brings out the best in us as human beings. It's a universal language. It helps you connect with other people beyond words, beyond religion, politics, or even class. And it's been proven that studying music helps develop the mind and the brain. So, to me, it's a vital part of an upbringing, and every kid should have the chance to explore it.
Who would you say is your favorite superhero and why?
I think aesthetically I love the artwork and the look of the Silver Surfer. I just always thought that was cool, like a space dude riding a surfboard, you know, through space.
given this release and your love of superhero and comic books, have you thought about getting in touch with the guys at Marvel in DC and offering a song or your services?
I haven't thought about it, but I would love that. And I hope they hear this and like it, at the very least. But what I've been thinking is, wouldn't it be great to do a live production of this with, you know, a good production budget and really do it with all these people, yeah.
What is your favorite, out of all the, I guess, comic book movies that have come out recently, would you say you have a favorite?
I think I really enjoyed the first X-Men movie, and, you know, I liked the scene in Canada, of course, with Sasquatch and Wolverine.
Yeah.
But I also really liked the, is it called the Spider-Verse? The latest?
Yeah, Into the Spider-Verse, yeah. The animated one. Yeah.
Holy smokes. That,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
That was an amazing film. You know, we've been talking a lot about education in this interview, and you know, there's been a lot of debate among people about how much comic books and, you know, cartoons can teach us. But as someone who collected them as a kid, what are some lessons you think we can learn from this style and this genre?
Well, we can learn that the Hulk smash puny humans.
Fair
enough.
Yeah, there you go, right? That's good. So the people, you know, and obviously this is a limited release, you say, 500 records, but is there something you want people who listen to this to take away, perhaps, when they hear it?
What would I like them to take away after hearing this?
Yeah.
As far as musically?
Yeah, you know, musically, just maybe, you know, because it's, you know, it's got the whole superhero connection. There's, you know, a lot of different elements and moving parts, or should people just enjoy it for what it is?
Well, to me, the spirit of this is fun. And I've seen the reaction to this so far. People have been like, this is fun, and they really enjoy it, and that makes me happy. And I think that's the whole point, in a way. But also to appreciate on a deeper level that music can involve wild, joyous abandon and be fun, and
right.
And it's still important, you know, in a way.
Was it always a foregone conclusion that this was strictly going to be a limited release?
No. But that was sort of the record store day vibe, and I'm going to release it online eventually. It'll still be for music counts. But my thought is, you know, maybe in a few years, I release it again with a side B and a new issue of the comic, and it keeps going.
Have you ever thought about, you know, writing your own comic book, or maybe being a special writer for an existing comic series?
I've thought about stories from my life that could translate well into a graphic novel sort of thing. I've actually drawn a couple comics strips for the West End Phoenix, which is a paper that Dave Bedini has created. The latest one was a comic strip about me and my cousin Harlan living in Thorncliffe Park, and all the Swiss chalet he would buy, and that sort of thing.
Now, I know you're playing a couple of shows over the next few days here to promote this. I know you, are you playing at Dead Dog Records?
I'm not playing. I'm just going to hang out a bit and sign copies.
Sign some stuff.
Yeah, pick up my Lou Reed record.
Other than Lou Reed, who you've talked about, what are some other releases for Record Store Day that you're looking at getting your hands on? Or are you just going to see what there is?
I'm going to see what there is. I'd like to get the new Charlotte Cornfield record. She's a Toronto artist who I really like. I think they're reissuing a Rolling Stones Greatest Hits compilation, but it's been remastered, so I might like to get that. It's from the era of the Stones that I love, with like Ruby Tuesday and Play With Fire and all that. Excuse me. Other than that, no, I'm just going to see what comes out.
What do you make of the state of the industry today, both in this city and in Canada? Do you like where the music industry is headed?
Yes. You know, I there's so much talent in this country. I find a lot of people are making music the same way, you know, with computer, using the same sources for drum sounds and stuff, that I find there's a lot of stuff that could start sounding the same, but that makes the stuff that's special really stand out, you know. When I watched the Junos and heard Jeremy Dutcher, do you know him?
Yeah.
I was like, oh wow, this is special. But so many people out there, there's so much music out there, it's overwhelming.
you mentioned Charlotte Cornfield. Are there any musicians, particularly local, either up and coming or established, that you really like and you would encourage people to check out?
Sure, my friend Don Kerr, who I played with in the Rio Statics, and Kurt Swinghammer, and Kevin, forget his last name, but they have a band called Communism, and they're playing around town, and they play some of their own songs and covers, and they're a great live band. The Sky Diggers, in my mind, are Toronto's best band. Also, the Rio Statics have made a new record that's going to come out in the fall, and I played on that record, but the old drummer Dave Clark is back in the lineup, and it's like they're in fine form.
Are we going to see anything more from the Cousins in the future, do you think?
Yeah, we have a few songs in the works. Yeah. One called, it's like a punk rock song called Pump You, and we're going to be wearing dog masks.
Would you say, you're involved in a lot of these different projects? Does your approach as a writer change depending on what band you're performing in or what project you're working on?
Yeah, totally. But sometimes I just write and I don't think about who it's for or what, you know. But certainly, like recently I did a score for a film called There Are No Fakes, and it's about art fraud. And so, yeah, I'm going to try to fit the mood of that. And then when I work with Harland, you know, okay, there's more, the parameters shift a bit. Yeah.
And I know congratulations are in order because you and Bare Naked Ladies last year had a reunion with Steven when you guys played at the Canadian Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was a nice feeling to be inducted, of course. And it really felt cool to play and hear Steve's voice, you know, and perform with them again. You know, music and business relationships don't always work out, or they change and people's lives change, but we did a lot of great memories together with Steve, so it was nice to reconnect, if even for just a night.
I think the business aspect of music is something that people don't always understand, or they don't always put the importance on it that they should. Oh, how much have you learned about it over your career? Just as we're wrapping up here.
I've learned a lot over the years, and it's a very it can be a challenging relationship, because on one side you're being creative with people, which is should be free and, you know, very open, but then there's the business side of it, you know, and if you have a guy showing up on magic mushrooms every day, you know, it's not going to last too long. And that's not, I'm not referring to anyone, it's just a random example, you know?
True. Would you say there was a favorite piece or section of the superhero suite that you really, really like?
Well, I'm going to show you something. This was an album I loved when I was in high school. And this is by Hal Willner. And he put together all these artists doing songs by Walt Disney. So you have, like, Tom Waits singing Hi Ho. And, Ringo Starr singing When You Wish Upon a Star. And then you have the Sun Ra Orchestra doing Pink Elephants on Parade. And I don't know if you know Sun Ra, but he's an avant-garde jazz pioneer. And that was my first time discovering him. And so I asked Michael Ray, who's played with Sun Ra since the 70s, to play on this. And that's Michael Ray there, sort of. But he plays trumpet on the whole medley. And then at the very end, we do this outro that lasts just over a minute. And we kind of go into this outer space musical vibe. That's my favorite part of the whole thing, and it's mainly him improvising on trumpet.
I'm just looking at the notes here with Iron Man, and I've had both Alan Doyle and Carol Pope on the show previously.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Separately, not at the same time. And I actually have a really good friend who has made a song with it, open for Carol Pope a couple years ago here in Toronto.
Clara?
Yeah.
You know Clara?
I've known Claire my whole life.
Oh, okay.
She's a very good fit.
I love Claire.
Our dads were business partners.
Oh, okay.
So I've known her my whole life.
I love Claire.
But that those two together strike me as a very unique duo. How did that collaboration come about? Do you remember?
Sure. Well, I played on something that Alan recorded, and he said, if I can ever return the favor, let me know. And so we were on tour together, and Alan recorded it. And then I was recording a song called Resist It with Carol Pope. And I thought Carol singing Iron Man would be really cool, too.
She does have the voice for it, it strikes me.
Did you hear the scream she does at the end of it? It's amazing. And so I thought, let's do both, you know?
And I love how you got a Sean Colin for Flash's theme. People know him as a comedian, but they don't realize that he's also a musician as well.
He's a great singer, yeah. And I don't know if you know, Sean, Greg, and Phil were in a Toronto comedy troupe together called Porky and the Juice Pigs.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. And they've been broken up for a long time, but I had some really good times with them. So I've sort of reunited them here. They weren't in the same room, but they're all on this track.
Yeah. I think their song that I remember them was, I think I'm the Only Gay Eskimo. Was that?
Yeah.
Was that them? Yeah.
Yeah. That's them.
And then, I love the fact that you guys with B&L also play with the Violent Femmes. I really like that section as well. I thought that worked.
Cool, thank you.
So, well, the album is Kevin Hearn and Friends, the Superhero Suite. Exclusive release for Record Store Day, limited release. Everyone should go buy it, as all the proceeds go to the Music Counts charity, which goes to support music education. Kevin Hearn, thanks so much for your time today, man.
Thank you. Pleasure.
That was my interview with Kevin Hearn of the Barenaked Ladies and the Rio Statics. She has a new collaborative record out called Kevin Hearn and Friends Presents the Superhero Suite, which was released in limited release yesterday, April 13th, for Record Store Day. All proceeds go to the charity Music Counts. Thank you so much for Kevin for coming on. My thanks to Jessica and Christina at Listen Harder PR for setting this up. Extreme thanks to Joey Roselle for taking the photos. You'll be seeing them on Instagram and on Facebook. We're going to take you out with one last track off of the Superhero Suite. This is Spider-Man. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Whatever a spider can, spins a web and his size catches thieves just like flies.
Look out!
Here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud.
He's got radioactive.
Can he swing from a thread? Take a look over here.
Hey there!
Here goes the Spider-Man. In the chill of night,
at the scene of a crime,
like a streak of light,
he arrives just in time.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Wealth and fame he's ignored, action is his reward.
To him,
life is a great big bang. Wherever there's a hang, you'll find the Spider-Man. You'll find the Spider-Man. Find the Spider-Man. You'll find the Spider-Man.